This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The big one at one each and every day, kicking off the final hour of the show. Grant and Danny, 106. Seven, the fan. The big one today, a trip around the NFL with a tremendous guest. On the line is Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Brian Baldinger. As always, Insider calls are brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire. Brian, thanks a ton for making some time for us. I want to start with this Trent Williams saga. This holdout is ongoing, and at first we all accepted the possibility that maybe he'd miss training camp, but eventually he's coming back, and now it's starting to look like maybe he's never going to be a Redskin again. Where do you weigh in on this?
Well, I mean, I've heard, you know, various reports about a lot of disagreements between Trent and the medical staff. And I don't know that I should say, you know, anything outside of what has been reported. But I know Trent's very unhappy. I think the Redskins feel like maybe if they throw more money at him, like that will bring him back. But I think there's some real strong differences between the two right now. And I wouldn't expect to see Trent in there, you know, this week. And I don't know that we're going to see him anytime soon. I think he's very upset about the way things have been handled.
Brian, from your perspective, what should the Redskins accept in trade? Is there a price that becomes too good to pass up?
I don't know what the price tag is out there. I mean, he's an elite player. There's not many guys like Trent Williams in this business. And when he's healthy, he's as good as anybody out there. You know, if the season starts on September 8th and Trent Williams ended up on another team on September 7th, on probably 25 to 30 teams in this league, he'd be the starting left tackle on September 8th. So, you know, I mean, you just can't let those kind of guys outside the building. I mean, if I'm the Redskins, he's under contract, I would do everything I possibly can to keep him there. He's a difference maker, and they're a better football team. I mean, I think he's their best offensive player. So they're a better football team when Trent Williams is in the lineup.
At Baldy NFL, I follow your hashtag Baldy's breakdowns for all your film clips. You do a great job studying, particularly the trenches. I'm curious, how much would play calling change? How much would what the Redskins are able to do as an offensive line be altered if Williams is out and Donald Penn at 36 or Jaron Christian, a second-year player without any experience, gets plugged in?
Well, I mean, I think you have to – I mean, I think Jay and the staff would really have to monitor how they protect, you know, I mean, whether it's a back getting over there and chip, any kind of a third and long type situation, you probably got to think about helping Jaron or Jaron or Donald Penn out. I mean, I don't know. It depends on, you know, who's out there and who's having trouble. But, you know, for just about any defensive end in the league or outside linebacker in the league, wouldn't have to think about doing any of that as long as Trent is out there. I mean, he can handle that blind side as well as anybody in this business. So, I mean, you've really got to think about how you protect. And it certainly does affect the play call, and it certainly affects how the quarterback play the game if Trent is in the game versus anybody else that's over there right now.
Our Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Brian Baldinger with us here on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Baldy, you mentioned quarterback play. I love your breakdown of what you saw at Dwayne Haskins in his first preseason outing. For folks that may not have had a chance, what did you see? What did you like? And what does he need to work on?
Well, I mean, I saw a big arm. You know, I mean, I saw a guy that could flick the ball. And, you know, he's accurate with it. And I thought he made a number of really good throws. He was under duress quite a bit. The protection was not great. They had a lot of holding calls. I mean, they might have had holding calls on three straight plays in a row, if I remember correctly. It wasn't a good performance up front. But, you know, that's not his, you know, that's not his job. His job is to move the football team. And I thought he did that. I mean, there's some it's like, you know, even Dwayne said, he said to me, like, this thing is a marathon. It's a good start. I thought it was just a good, solid start for him. I don't know what the – I don't know. It's hard to have a three-man competition for a start. But, I mean, if I was Jay, I'd want to see more of Dwayne. And, you know, possibly see him with, you know, a better, you know, cast around him. But they're not going to give him the job. They shouldn't give him the job. But, I mean, I think he was highly competitive, and I thought it was a good start for him.
Brian Baldinger on Grant and Danny. Antonio Brown – madness with the Raiders has been epic over the last few days. He actually tweeted this morning, he's looking for a Shut Air Advantage adult large helmet that was manufactured in 2010 or after. If someone could present it to him, he will exchange for that helmet a signed practice worn Raiders helmet. So maybe that's his loophole to try to find a new helmet he can wear. I don't know. What's your thought on how good he has to be to justify what you have to deal with to roster Brown at this point?
Well, I mean, he's an elite. I mean, I don't know if he's the best receiver in football. He's the best route runner in all football. The Raiders are a better team when he's in the lineup by far. I mean, he's a great football player. I mean, off the field, and some of these things that are kind of piling up here are a whole nother thing. But I know September 8th when the Raiders start, I expect Antonio Brown to be a big part of that offense. I was out there at practice last Thursday against the Rams. And, you know, Derek Carr's not as good if Antonio Brown isn't in the lineup. But those things being said, players get attached to equipment. I wore the same stupid knee brace my entire life. I mean, I felt, you know, like I wasn't in a complete uniform without that brace on my knee, even though I don't think I needed it. But it was a part of my equipment. Now, the helmets that they want him to wear, he says he's got obstructed vision. Like, sometimes that affects how you catch the ball. Sometimes it affects when a guy comes to hit him and how quickly he can react to it. So I understand it. I mean, he's just been the best receiver in football six straight years in a row over that period of time.
Baldy, let me ask you a question.
I kind of understand some of this.
Yeah, because you would know this better than I would, but I want to jump in on that. How is it that, I mean, there's 1,600 guys in the league that have the same rules for helmets. A lot of them don't like
it. Not all of them are the best receiver in football. Some of them are offensive linemen.
I get
it. Some of them aren't affected by it. I mean, he seems to be affected by it.
But so why is he affected by the vision and every other receiver's not?
I don't know. I mean, maybe they've had a different helmet that he has, and they just adjusted to it, you know? And so for whatever reason, you know, this is his own personal helmet. Brady complained about it. Aaron Rodgers complained about it. Now, they adjusted. But it might not have been an easy adjustment, but they adjusted. And Antonio Brown is going to have to adjust. He fought the law. The law won. That's okay. I understand it to a certain degree. I mean, I wouldn't go out there and just make some statement like I'm not going to play football again. I mean, I wouldn't make that statement. But, you know, he hadn't been able to play anyways because of his foot condition, which is a serious condition. You know, this guy makes a living with his feet. So if he can't move without pain the way he couldn't, then he hasn't been able to practice. It'd be no different than somebody spraining their foot or, you know, having Liz Frank or anything else. I mean, you can't run, you can't run. But in the meantime, this thing I think is going to get settled. I think he's going to be on the field pretty soon. And really all that matters, I mean, we're not having fun with this. It's not a laughing or a fun matter. But when he gets out there, it's only going to be about production. The sooner he gets – I saw John Gruden. He's not happy. He's frustrated. The sooner he does get out on the field and start practicing, the better the offense is going to look and the better they'll be prepared for their first game.
Brian Baldinger with us here. Just a minute or two left with him. Brian, I want to go back to quarterbacks with you for one second. The common wisdom now is for quarterbacks, especially young ones, to maybe if they're like project style like Haskins or maybe a couple other guys have been, to maybe sit for a few weeks and kind of figure it out and then step in. Obviously, the Mahomes sort of rule now, right? Are you a throw them into the deep end and see if they can swim? Because if they can't deal with a little bit of failure, then they can't deal. Or nurture them along, give them the best chance for success. Where are you at in general?
Well, I'm not in any of those camps, to be honest with you. I mean, I was there when Matt Ryan got drafted in 2008. I was doing the preseason games in Atlanta, and he was the third pick in the draft, but he was the third quarterback on the roster to start it. And by the end of the third preseason game, he was clearly the best quarterback on the team, and he was ready to play. Joe Flacco started right away, although he was the third quarterback to start in Baltimore in 2008. And by week one, because of injuries and other things, he was ready to go. Baker Mayfield, to me, wasn't allowed to compete last year. And it was a silly deal that Hugh Jackson was. But he was, to me, far and away better than anybody else on that roster. He should have started week one. He probably would have been the rookie of the year. But everybody is different. And so you can't just give anybody the job. And it's not a question of sinking or swimming. If they're not ready, they're not ready. Everybody learns differently. Everybody plays the game differently. If Dwayne Haskins, in my mind, is the best quarterback on Washington's roster on September 8th, then he should start against the Philadelphia Eagles. But, I mean, there's a lot of football to be played between now and September 8th. But I think everybody is different, and you have to earn the job. And you may struggle a little bit, but if you're the best option to win games, then you should play.
Baldy, you're awesome. It was great having you on. Look forward to doing it again down the road. Enjoy week two of the preseason.
I look forward to it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Our pleasure. This is Brian Baldinger on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Radio.com Sports NFL Insider. Our insiders' calls are brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire. Big thanks to Brian Baldinger. Next, we've got someone telling us Trent Williams is on our way out. Nats Park. There's a little rain in the forecast. Supposedly game two against the Reds tonight if they can get it in. Need more energy at the ballpark. We'll get into that as well. G&D 106.7 The Fan. Much appreciate you listening. We'll get back into Trent Williams in just a minute. Spent a bunch of time talking about him today, really starting at around noon when J.P. Finley of NBC Sports Washington said he thinks Williams is as good as gone. You just heard what Brian Baldinger had to say about Williams and just how much different this offense will look without him. Goes without saying. I mean, Jay Gruden's on record saying he'll have to call plays differently if Trent's not around.
Yeah. I mean, Eric Fetty's thrown well the last couple times out. I'd rather have Max Scherzer pitch.
You would?
Yeah. No one's taking crazy pills here.
Why?
You can get away with something for the short term. I don't want to get away with anything. I want my stars.
You mentioned the Nats. Wanted to get into something, and these types of conversations never go well. So I actually spent a lot of time last night thinking about what the most constructive way to have this discussion is so that it doesn't turn into people being mad at us and just saying that we are shaming fans, which is not the intention and really not
how I
hope. How I hope this ends. Yeah, and it also doesn't exist, but that's your own issue. I think the best way to do this is not to basically say, oh, Nats Park's environment is bad. I guess my question is, how can we ensure, not we, me, and you, but we, people who are invested and engaged and care about the Nationals, that the environment at Nationals Park gets where it needs to go down the stretch here? That's really all I care about. Someone sent me a tweet last night and said, what is your end game here? Because I tweeted an observation about the ballpark last night. They said, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you just trolling? I said, no, I'm trying to have people acknowledge that there's 5 homestands left. It's the middle of August. We are embarking on the first playoff run in the history of this organization. Not that they haven't been to the playoffs, but there's never been a night in, night out, every game matters playoff push like this one.
Correct.
This is unprecedented, unchartered. We have not been in these waters and swum around. This is different. You see when you turn on the TV in other places, like Cleveland right now, similar boat to the Nats, just caught a team to make their playoff push mean something. New York, the Mets, unbelievable this weekend what the environment's been like for them. And some of the other teams right there in the thick of things. Even at Citizens Bank Park, I've been streaming some radio.com, Philadelphia radio the last few days. They are so out on this team. They think they're dead in the water and they're done. And you watch the energy at times in those ballparks, and sometimes it's negative energy. But people are invested, and they're living, and they're dying. And I'm just picking a few examples.
Sure.
But last night, the Nats got home after a road trip where they had a winning record, and they came back the top team in the wild card to start a massive series. Everyone says, they're playing the Reds. The Reds have the reigning player of the week in the National League, the biggest story in baseball right now, with a homer last night. They had won 10 of 15 games. They're red hot. And they are within a handful of games of the wild card, by the way. That's not a bad matchup. That's actually a good matchup. I understand that it's a Monday night. I'm not expecting it to look like Citi Field and the Mets. But, Danny, I want it to be loud. I want there to be energy. I want it to look like we are ramping up towards something. That, at first pitch yesterday, the scene looked like that first game they come back to in March when they play the Twins, like the dress rehearsal at Nats Park before the opening day game. That was the first inning and a half or so last night of the game. Now, eventually, late arriving crowd, there were 21,000 people. It was okay. They would show the crowd when Gerardo Parra would come up and everyone was doing the shark chant, which I love, and they're clapping their hands. But in each of those shots, you'd see sections that were just open. Like it's Camden Yards in Baltimore, of just nobody there. So I don't point that out to annoy people. You know, I don't want John Taffer to come into your restaurant and say, hey, you need to stop giving away shots and you need to stop getting drunk, and you to cry and scream at me that I'm a jerk and run away. All I'm saying is, I'm watching a lot of baseball in other environments right now, and we are building. There's like it's a symphony, like a crescendo, where we're going towards something. There's 5 homestands left. They play a month and a half left this season. There's always a reason. There's always an excuse. Yesterday, a couple schools went back, and it was Monday night, and there's traffic in the metro. We got to make sure that this looks like a playoff environment the rest of the way. It did not at all last night. I don't think it's going to every Monday and Tuesday night, but it better on Saturdays, it better on Fridays. We got to do, as a fan base, what is expected. And I'm not doing a rah-rah like the team needs us. I know Steven Strasburg did that. Players have been talking about this, by the way.
Sure.
He came out and said, I hope our fans saw how the fans acted at Citi Field. What I am saying, though, is there's what it's supposed to look like, and then there's what last night was. And I hope we're building towards something. This is a great chance for this city. This should look like the playoffs over the next few weeks.
So a number of things to say out of this. Number one, you're right. There's a subsection of people that will just say, this is fan shaming, or you're trolling, or you like the Orioles, Grant, and just not listen. And I think that's unfortunate. Number two, you mentioned Cleveland. They are 25 games over 500, have managed an unbelievable stretch where they're now in first place. Look like the Twins had that division locked up, and now Cleveland's in first. They drew 1,800 more than the Nationals did last night, and their ballpark was dead, and it's a great ballpark. So my point is, this isn't only unique to Washington. Now, I think that ballpark should be better. I think the Nationals park right now should be better. People are right now, I think, slow to kind of understand. You're right, this is uncharted territory. And what I hear are people reflexively get defensive, and all I say is, hey, here are the reasons why this isn't happening yet. And I think they're, quote, legitimate reasons. I do. I also think that as a fan base, let's see if we can get above those reasons.
Well, so I'm just looking for an acknowledgement. Someone's like, well, what is the point? Well, the point is, well, school's back. Okay. It might rain tomorrow. Okay. I've got to take my dog for a walk. Okay, whatever it is.
Right.
You have kids. I've got a wife. Like, there's a million reasons. I'm not saying anything other than all those things might be relevant. Hey, let's make sure that when there's a big game to be played against a wild card team like the Brewers this weekend at Nats Park, there is not 21,000 people there. There should be double that or close to it. And forget how many people are there, which is important. There's got to be an intensity and an electricity. There has not been that. Watching the game at Citi Field this weekend, and the comp is not that, you know, it has to be exactly that. But I told you this when I came in the other day. I've never seen Nationals Park like that for a regular season game. Now, New York is a baseball hotbed. Mets fans have existed for longer than I've been alive. The Nats are a baby compared to the Mets, who are an elderly person that gets a discount at Denny's at 5 in the afternoon when they eat their dinner. I get all of those things. But I was at the Strasburg debut, and that was the best regular season environment I've probably ever been at Nats Park, and that's the closest thing. I was at the Harper return game in April. I was at both of those games for the Harper series at night. Probably more so, I think, the first one because of the weather. It was not that. It was great. It was fun. I had so much fun sitting there with my mom watching that game. But all I'm saying is we can all be very defensive and get upset, and you can say we're fan shaming and we're jerks. And okay, when we do segments like this, I know to put my big boy pants on, and you'll all be very angry that I grew up going to Camden Yards, and that's cool. However, there's 6 weeks left in this season. Every single game this team plays is massive. It will be playing home games against the Phillies and Bryce Harper, against the Atlanta Braves, who they're a handful of games back from in the division. This homestand is against two teams in the NL Central chasing Washington for the wild card. If you sweep the Reds, you probably end their season. If you sweep the Brewers, you make their road really difficult. And the first game back last night, after the longest tenured player on the team, Steven Strasburg, not named Ryan Zimmerman, said, "I hope our fans are watching." You think he just said that on accident? You think he doesn't realize the difference between some of these ballparks he's in and Nats Park? Now, we can have a bunch of discussion just to why it is. I don't want to have that discussion. We've had that discussion. I guess what I'm asking is, do you think fans are going to respond down the stretch here?
No, is my answer.
Can we expect a playoff atmosphere at this ballpark in the regular season, yes or no? My concern, my fear, is that we can't. And I think part of it is because every time we try to talk about it, people say, it isn't necessarily that let's have a dialogue about it. It's, you're being mean. This is ridiculous. Okay. Keep saying that when John Taffer's trying to help your restaurant. You see what I'm saying? Like, you have to acknowledge there's a problem. Nobody acknowledges that yesterday wasn't a good atmosphere. Now, if you want to say it wasn't a good atmosphere and then have a better dialogue, we could do that too. But I need people to get that last night wasn't good. It just wasn't. Someone tweeted me and was like, you're just incorrect. FP said it was a great atmosphere. I didn't hear that. I watched the entire game. I don't remember FP saying that. I'll take your word for it that he did say that. I personally don't think he would have said the opposite of that. And that's not his fault. I'm not knocking FP. He shouldn't. That's not his role. But if you really thought watching that game, particularly the early portion of that game against the Reds, two teams within a handful of games in the wild card chase in mid-August, that was a fun place to be for Nats baseball last night, that the players got energy out of that crowd and weren't creating it for themselves, I think you're fooling yourself. 800-636-1067. Let's get some calls on this next. GB 1067, the fan. This probably won't end well, but we're discussing it. People normally get very bothered when we do things like this, but I think it's, you know, we say all the time, we got to ask the right questions when people and players are on, even if we don't want to. You think it was fun today with Sean Doolittle on to talk about how he would respond if Davey Martinez didn't give him ninth inning opportunities?
We love Sean Doolittle. Hopefully he likes us okay, at least tolerates us. And
he did before today.
Yeah, this is the gig. It's unfortunate, but you got to do it, right?
I think I'm being very understated and very friendly here. I am walking on eggshells, and I shouldn't be. I should be going way harder in the paint than I am. But I'm doing my best to not bother anybody while just asking, can we do a little bit better moving forward? I'm not going to talk about where we are or what we aren't doing, or I don't need any of that discussed. My point is, playoff baseball is happening. This is now, people. Every game is deciding whether or not this team makes the playoffs or not. And it's not like you're playing the Orioles or the A's today. You're playing a team that, had they have come in here and taken three straight games, would be within a couple games, literally, two of you in the wild card race. They're still in the hunt. You can eliminate them. The Brewers even more so into the weekend. All these games matter. There are five more homestands. Listen to this promo that we're going to be airing on the station. Like this, like, the Nationals are trying to do the unthinkable. Like, we're building up all this energy. And then you tell me if last night's atmosphere, with about 11,000 people there at first pitch, turned into 21 by the end of the night, and a couple people clapping a few times for Gerardo Parra, equals this promo. Every game is critical, right? The playoffs are here, we're saying. Let's look live at the ballpark. Come on, Fetty! Attaboy! Like, in every section, one guy yelling, what are we doing?
I really believe that, I go back to 2012, the first time the Nats made the playoffs. We had to basically do here's what you do in playoff games, right? This is all new. This fan base is not very old. Dads haven't grown up, kids haven't grown up with their dads going to games and moms and everything else. This is all a new experience. People still think, by the way, the Nationals is, quote, not having a very good season. And by the recent standards they've established, that's, I guess, technically correct. But they've been on a run. They're in the playoffs if they started today. People still don't know how to quite act accordingly. They haven't updated their file from a couple months ago when they checked out on the Nationals, who are 19-31, and they don't think Davey Martinez is any good. And they're still mad that Bryce Harper isn't here. Whatever the case, people haven't bought in. This experience will be valuable. Now, if we're still doing this when every 10-year-old that's at the stadium now is 35 and bringing their young kid to the game in 25 years, I think this is then cause for panic. This is still very new. So while I'm excusing it or understanding of it, that it happens in a lot of marketplaces, I'm basically saying, let's skip ahead. Let's acknowledge this and skip ahead to the part where it's awesome. Let's do this quickly. Let's not wait for everybody to figure it out. We're telling you, let's figure it out now.
I have less a problem with the environment not being any good and more the unwillingness to acknowledge it or try to improve upon it. Like, to me, it's more annoying. Being fat is not the crime, okay? When someone says, hey, Grant, you're fat. You got to lose some weight. For me to say, dude, don't tell me that. Like, leave me alone. That's a worse crime than being fat and knowing you need to do something about it. And I guess that's my issue is we can't actually improve upon this if everyone just hears someone say, man, this isn't good enough. And their response is not, yeah, how do we do better?
Fan shaming.
You leave me alone. JT in Ashburn, what's going on?
Hey, I'm doing well. What's up, man? I have two different ideas about what could possibly be wrong. I do believe that the energy, regardless of how many people are at the stadium, should be much higher. I do believe the fan base, when I go to the games, the energy is not as high as it should be. But I think there are multiple issues at hand that people are, like, understating. Like, first of all, the Metro is a disaster with all the shuttle buses and stations being changed, and they close the station. You got to leave by, like, 11 o'clock or 10:30 to make sure you catch your train during the week, which is insane. And then also, I think the understatement, it's the biggest issue, is this being a government federal town. That government shutdown at the beginning of the year affected a lot of people who would typically buy into professional sports and buy into the games and commit to going to a lot of these games. So the federal, you got people who contract, you got military. I think the fan base just doesn't, they're not buying in whether they don't have the money.
I get it, JT.
It's a million factors. Thanks, JT.
Look, Loudoun County and Fairfax are two of the richest counties in the country, driving distance right here, a lot of Nats fans. I mean, that's an issue for a lot of teams, and it's an issue for this one, I'm sure, as well. But I know that you cannot completely have this discussion without saying why it is what it is. I'm not trying to re-legislate the discussion we've had a million times of why the attendance is not one of the higher in baseball, why it never will be, okay? What I'm trying to say is, do you think fans will respond in this playoff run? I can live with a June and a July where we are the 22nd best environment in Major League Baseball, despite being the sixth best team or whatever it was at that time. And for those 2 months, the best team, for that matter. I'll take that. I'm saying now's the time we got to fix this and get it right. Do you think this fan base will do that? Aaron in Clarendon, what's up?
Hey, what's up, fellas?
Hey, man.
So I think the main reason is kind of caveat the other guy is it's the demographics. When you look at the D.C. area, it's all transient, like mostly D.C. area, Nova. I feel like most of the hardcore fans are like, you know, further out in Virginia. I think that's the number one reason. But another reason is I feel like the people that go to the weekday games are going for like the social aspect of it, not necessarily for the weekend, you know, whenever there's a good team in town.
It feels like it watching on TV last night. You know, it feels like it when I'm at the ballpark, every single homestand for at least a game. Every time I'm there, I'm looking around going, okay, that guy gets it. Yep, he gets it. But those three, those four?
Are they going to be told to sit down during the seventh inning when there's a huge situation?
Still happens, by the way. Seen it constantly at games at Nats Park. People standing up with two strikes being yelled at to sit down. It's unfathomable. 800-636-1067. Let's get you some breaking news. We'll come back, get your calls on the Nats Park scene from last night. Playoffs. The Dodgers draw about 21,000 more a game than the Nats. The Cardinals about 20,000 more per game. Not quite. I guess they're about 17,000 more. I don't need you to be the Yankees or the Cubs, right? Or even the Rockies. But the people that are there, you just want some energy, some pizzazz. And it wasn't last night. We're asking if you think fans are going to respond during this first ever playoff run. A couple people have tweeted and said, when the playoffs are here, we're going to be loud and proud. Well, first of all, you might not get a home game the way things are trending. I mean, you might be on the road for a wild card play-in game if they even make it. And of course, front-running people are going to show up for the playoffs. I get that. these are the playoffs, just so we're all on the same page. This next month and a half is the playoffs. This is what I'm talking about. Jeff Reston, how are you?
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
Just want to say, Grant, you know, I feel you. I do agree with you, and I acknowledge that there is a problem, and I'm doing my best to be part of the solution for it as well. I think we all know, we've talked about the, you know, difficulties in the city and the Washington, D.C. being a transit area and all of that. I think another thing that's new to us is this is our first wild card chase in
yes.
the 10 years or 12 years that we've had, or however many years it is now. You know, we've been front runners or trying to win the division every year, and I think this is new to us. And even for me, it is weird looking at the standings every time and seeing, oh, okay, Cincinnati's here. Well, they're still in it, and the Brewers are coming in, and I think they're the third team, like the first team out of the wild card right
they
now.
They are. And it's such a good call, Jeff, and that's kind of my point why I think this is a discussion that we should have. It is new to people. People aren't used to the fact that it might be August 13th, but this game is now massive. And so that's kind of why I think we bring it up. Is
100%.
Last night was a huge win.
It was a big deal. And listen, this is not just a DC thing. And I think here's the thing I want to make sure I get out there. Oakland, Minnesota, Tampa Bay, Cleveland, all good, all not drawing diddly. And their fans don't care.
I'll take their atmospheres, though, over this one.
Maybe, but that to me is not the point. The point is,
it's my point.
It's not just DC where this is happening. It's also not fair to say we're not Boston or New York, okay? That doesn't mean there isn't room for improvement. And I think that's the biggest deal, is people say, well, there's a reason why it's happening. Of course, great. That's awesome.
Yes.
Let's see what we can do. What can we do anything? And I believe it won't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we need to go through these things.
Everyone's screaming about why there's no energy in the ballpark. Cool. That's not the discussion I want to have. How do we get the energy there, and how can we make sure it's not a dud for the rest of this homestand like it was last night? Jonathan in Rockville, how are you?
Good, guys. How are you?
Hey,
I think in terms of energy, a real practical place to start is the clapping for the cheering for the third strike when there's two strikes on an opposing batter. And I think Mets fans, they just don't get it. They don't actually understand. And maybe need to be taught by you guys or Nats marketing that it's a good thing to stand up and yell and cheer for the third strike.
Right? Jonathan, we try. And we're trying now, and we're going to keep trying. I'm not going to stop. But just know that there is no wanting of that. It's taken as you're being a jerk and you're talking down to us and you're shaming us. When you say, hey, guys, with two strikes and two outs, everyone in the ballpark gets on their feet and let's get into this. I don't care if it's the first inning, a la the Mets on Sunday. But it's not taken as a constructive way of let's operate and we're still young and let's figure this out together. It's taken as we are good and you're questioning us and you don't know what it's like to be us. Okay. I just watch every single game, nine innings at a time, and go to 40 games a year, but I don't know what it's like to be a Nats fan. Kyle in D.C., how are you?
Hey, Kyle.
I'm doing good, guys. I'm the guy you can hear on the broadcast up in the gallery section chanting every single day.
Nice.
It doesn't matter. I give speeches about how we're on a playoff run and everyone needs to be into it. I'll get them to clap and cheer for literally one at bat and it'll be silent for the rest of the game. I do think there's one issue that maybe we can correct. Our organist does not keep up the chants long enough. He'll play like a half of a chant. He'll play like a quarter of a chant and he'll stop at 30 seconds before the pitcher throws the ball. Get him going longer. Get the crowd into it.
Thank you, Kyle. 800-636-1067 is the number. 800-636-1067. Yeah, I think there's probably guidelines for when the organist is allowed to play and not play. I don't know that he's allowed to play during the actual live action of the game, so there might be a reason why he stops. Frank and Reston, what's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
What's up, buddy?
I've been to the games, and I used to live in Cincinnati where it was really different. They'd have a midsummer game with the Dodgers, and it was like the World Series. I just have never understood why it's like this, and I think part of it is because it has to be like the most important thing in your life, like it seemed to be to those Mets fans in New York.
Yeah, that day, that's what mattered, right? I mean, it was the priority. They took great pride in every strike, in every out, in every hit. It was great, and I know that yesterday I was saying, oh, man, coming off that Mets series, coming back here, this is depressing. My point wasn't a Sunday in the division against a team you're chasing should be the exact same as a Monday night out of the division back at home against a team in the Central who's sub 500. But there was a lot going for last night's game, including playoff implications for you and your opponent. The player of the week in the sport is the biggest story in baseball right now, hitting more homers in his first 10 games than everyone ever
Anyone ever has.
I mean, there was a lot going for that game.
So we know that, and I think the point that I would make to it is I don't think Nats fans knew that. And I know why they don't necessarily know that. But our point is let's go. Let's acknowledge it. Let's do know that. Let's understand that last night was massive. So is tonight, by the way, if they get it in. So are these games against Milwaukee. We're just not used to that. We're used to being on our cruise control or being out of it. Sorry, this one's new.
Let's go to Mike in Sterling on the fan. What's up, Mike?
I first want to start out by saying you two are doing the Lord's work in trying to make this a baseball town, and I appreciate you so much.
Thanks,
but they're not going to meet your expectations because they're unrealistic. You asked the question of how do you get the energy. I mean, seriously, the caller with the about the Reds recently, they were established in 1881. You know, Phillies, 1883, yeah. Indians, 1894. These are five generations where a kid can point to his dad and his dad's dad and so on and so on. And the mania builds. And we just, at a half generation, we're just not going to have that. There is no way to get the energy outside of just being good for a long time so that people can pass down that mania and make it build.
So we just kind of deal?
Well, we have to do like the previous caller said, where it's like you get in there, you show people that you got to care on every single pitch in the third inning or the ninth, and just try to bring that energy level up. And like I say, I've got two kids, 11 and 13. I try to bring them into the games, try to get the mania instilled so that they'll pass it on to their kids. You know, that's just – you got a deal. For now, just do everything you can, but recognize that it's going to take time. If you want us to be like the Mets and the Indians and the Phillies who've been around for two-plus, five generations, it's going to take generations to do.
I think it's a really, really good call. Love to take more of them. Chad Dukes versus the World starts in just a couple of minutes here at the top of the hour at 2. He'll keep the Nats combo going today. He's got Adam Eaton on. Speaking of the Nationals, Eric Fetty joins our show tomorrow. Grant and Danny in the books. Thanks for listening. TheFanDC.com is where you can find our podcast.
Fortuitous as Betty joins us tomorrow. Betty Franklin, 4.5 hours. Next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.